Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And we co-wrote with our colleague, Stephen Slate, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. Notice our QR code right there. If you're watching this, that's the QR code for our free app. If you don't have it, I suggest you get it.
Yes.
It's got a ton of free sample content and access to all of our products and services as well.
Including our free live events. We're doing them just about every single week to talk about the Freedom Model movement, to talk about how you can become an integral part of the movement with us. We are changing the way people view addiction, and we're changing the way people struggling with it are helped.
That's right. So if you want to become an affiliate or become a certified Freedom Model coach, or you just want to be part of the movement by being a coalition member, I would suggest you go to that live event. That's free as well. So there'll be links in the description of this for that.
And you'll get the opportunity to talk with us because it's about an hour long event. About 40 to 45 minutes are us showing you a presentation. And then the last 15 minutes, you get to ask us questions.
And then also, if you can't make the live event, don't worry. It's recorded. Just enroll for it and then watch
the replay afterwards.
Yep, the recording.
All right. So what are we going to talk about today?
Today, we're going to talk about self-sabotage. This is an oft misunderstood concept.
Comes up a lot in coaching.
It does. And it can be very confusing to people.
Yep.
The reason it becomes confusing is people ask themselves, you know, why do I do things right to the point where I'm super successful, just about to have a breakthrough, and then I destroy it and I burn the house down, you know?
Yeah.
And it's an incredibly common thing. This isn't uncommon. So, but it is mystifying for a lot of people. And I'm just going to tell a quick story. So I had a fella who would drink, and his self-sabotage was really kind of extraordinary in this way, in that it was very, very well-defined and very black and white and very well-known by him. So he would drink himself into oblivion. He'd go on these binges where he'd drink. He was from Montana, and he was a really cool dude. And he would drink until he would sit in the basement, watch the news, drink himself into oblivion for weeks. He had a beautiful family, beautiful wife, good business, and no discernible reason why he should be doing this. And then he would literally drink himself right into a detox situation where he was shaking apart. And when he came to the retreat back in the day, I had to take him to detox because he was such a mess. I had to, he couldn't stay at the retreat. We had to take him down to the hospital. So he was explaining to me that he would do this to himself. And he said, "I just feel like that's what I have to do." And I said, "Whoa," let's say his name was Tom. That wasn't his real name, but I said, "Tom, why do you say that?" He goes, I feel like I absolutely need to just burn the house down." That was his term. And it was interesting because in his case, it was very black and white. Most of these situations aren't as black and white as this one was, but it was black and white because he had learned in AA that it was inevitable. And it was so simple for him. It was so simple. And I said, "You know, you don't have to do that." And he goes, "I don't." I go, no, you don't." He goes, "It's not inevitable." He goes, "I just make it happen because I figure if it's inevitable, fuck it. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to be proactive about this and just get it done." And it was really remarkable because it almost killed him. You know, it gave him stomach cancer and some other things that were a real problem, but he got through it. And we figured out that this was all a part of his binge construct, but it was a belief that this was inevitable in his case. So it was the addict identity that drove his self-sabotage. And that's a very simple case where you challenge this idea. He found out he didn't have to do this anymore.
Yeah.
But a lot of self-sabotage isn't so outwardly definable at first. It seems hidden. It seems very mystifying to people.
When it seems to defy, a lot of people use that as, you know, how can the positive drive principle be true? How is my self-sabotage a representation of my positive drive? I've worked with women who, and men, honestly, who were like, you know, I'm so happy and my life takes off when I have my periods of abstinence. And almost to a person, all of these people also have been in AA, have gone to treatment. And so there's this idea, this all or nothing idea that, you know, I have to be abstinent completely. And that, yes, my life when I'm abstinent takes off.
Yeah.
Like it all of a sudden, like it just kind of happens to them. Like good things just start to happen magically almost.
Yeah.
And then I get to a certain point and I just, I always use the term blow up the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'll mention that they're triggered by certain events, a fight with a spouse, a problem at work, or just as wonderful as they say their life's become, they'll say things just pile up and they just feel like they just need to, you know, go out and sabotage it.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah. So I had a student yesterday that I was coaching. And she said, you know, I, why do I do this? And so I gave her an assignment to figure that out in this certain way that we do in coaching. And she came back with a list and she goes, one of the biggest reasons that she sabotages her success is because it's familiar. It's familiar to stay unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to repeat that. It's familiar to stay unhappy. And so there's a real value in that. Did you want to?
I was just going to say, I have a student as well where it's familiar to stay in struggle.
Yes. Yeah. That these are huge things. So they become sort of these patterns where the person literally defines themselves by their struggle.
Yes.
And so self-sabotage doesn't seem all that out of the question, because when they step out of their binge construct, and it doesn't necessarily just have to do with drinking and drugging, it usually has to do with that plus some habits with relationships, self-sabotage.
Oh, yeah.
Or career, or a variation of those things where they start having success. And what they're doing is they're growing outside of what we call the disco ball in the workshop that we talk about, their binge construct. They're growing past the pain and usual patterns of self-sabotage and pain and going down a bad path. They're growing out of that. And as they grow out of that, they see the benefits of that. But then they go, oh, my God. And they get a little bit outside and they go, you know, what are the benefits? What do I like? You know, I'm going to go back into what is familiar.
Yeah, what's
now,
comfortable.
Now, why would you go back to something that is painful and familiar? Why do you go back to the poisoned well for a drink, knowing it's poisoned? And that's the crucial question, because we know that humans don't do anything they don't believe benefits them.
That's right.
So going back into a painful cycle seems counterintuitive to that, but it's not, because the benefit is a hidden benefit. And behind all the misery and the poison in the well and all of that is a little slice of familiarity and stability. So familiarity builds stability, and stability may be the thing that in their value system more important than risk. And the risk of the unknown, which is, what if I let go of this bad marriage? What if I let go of or change it? Or what if I become this new person where I change my job and I stop drinking and I stop shooting heroin? And what if I let go of this chaotic relationship? And here's the real important point. What if I let go of all those things that occupy my time?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Because the occupation of your time, where you suck up the time resource, is the benefit. It is a distraction from growth, because growth is unknown. So you shift your value system back into, I like the familiar. No matter how painful it is, as long as I have little scraps of love, as long as I have little scraps of identity, maybe I get some accolades in a strange backwards way with being an addict. Maybe I get some benefits out of that, where I don't have to work as hard as everybody else, and I have an excuse to bail on my career. I have an excuse to bail on my relationships and not have to be nice to people. Maybe, you know, and it can go on and on and on. But really, it's to avoid evolving.
Yeah. Well, and there are reasons. There is value to not evolving, right?
Right.
There is. I worked with somebody years ago at the retreat who admitted to me at one point, she came to the conclusion, she's like, I don't want to be bored. I think if my life gets too good, I'll be bored.
Oh, that's a great point.
Right? Yeah. And I looked at her and I went, you know, I was afraid of that too.
I was too.
I was terrified of that.
I was too. I was, that is such a, I had forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you live this
chaotic, right? It's, you create, like, every time I would throw a temper tantrum in my marriage in my 20s, right? I was in my 20s and things would get good. They'd be get going good. Cause at that point I'm sober and we're doing the AA thing. And now there was enough chaos with AA, but in my relationship, if your relationship gets too happy, that's boring, right? You got to throw in a little temper tantrum every once in a while to just spice things up.
Fuck shit up.
Yeah. Right? So, yeah. I mean, I'm laughing, but we had settled into such a pattern of that, you know, in our early years together, that was just awful.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't, in my particular case, I don't think I knew what normal living was, because I grew up so feral.
Yeah.
In my family. And so it was,
that's all we knew as kids, was chaotic craziness.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, but I do remember thinking, it's sort of a classic 70s sitcom of being a square. Do you remember that?
Yes.
What are you, a square?
Totally, like, lame.
What are you, a square? Are you a nerd? And
there was like, people thought that was like a worse fate than death, yeah, for you to be like this boring vanilla horrible, like, just a little boring life. And it was, yeah.
Yeah. So what's interesting about that is my actual values are that I really enjoy artwork. I really enjoy meditating in nature. I really do like calm.
Me too.
I do like kindness. I do like, and yet here I was living a violent, chaotic existence that was incredibly lonely and painful, with scraps of love. And I use this analogy in my coaching all the time. I said, you're like a person that sits under a beautiful mahogany table filled with the finest cuisine. All the people are having a beautiful dinner and you're just waiting for the crumbs to fall, mm-hmm, and you snatch them up, but you volunteer to be under that table.
Yep.
It isn't because you're a victim. Now, I'm going to tell you something that's important here. And I say this in just about every podcast too, there's enough misery that's going to land in your lap that you don't have to make more of it. So you can be a victim in life. And God knows at some point you will be genuinely a victim, whether it's in a car accident or your spouse leaves you and cheats on you and it was totally unexpected.
Or you're a victim of crime.
Or cancer or some event, right? Or series of events. Sometimes it's really awful. But those are the sort of situations that that you simply have to react to and deal with, right? But when you're self-sabotaging,
right, you're creating chaos.
You have to, if you really want to get over that pattern, you have to look at the benefits of it that you see in it, because you will not sabotage your current state of affairs unless you see the value in it. And we have to constantly repeat that, because a lot of times the person conflates genuine things that are terrible that you have no control over
that land in your lap.
I always say the meteor lands in your lap, and which are not that common, believe it or not. I mean, no. The really big things that you are victimized by are not happening every day repetitiously. If they are, you're placing yourself in front of buses. Okay. So if you have the sort of lifestyle where it's just a shit sandwich every single day and you're like, nothing ever goes right, yet you will have to start looking at your circumstances and make moves.
Yeah.
Because at that point, if it's continuous and it's years long, then you're placing yourself in a situation where that condition exists.
Yeah.
That's not a meteor landing in your lap. That's you placing yourself in a bad situation that continues to repeat itself, and you see value in staying there. Now, a lot of times it's unknowing. It's just simply because that's what you've done. I used to take people from the retreat up into the mountains, and I know there's a lot of outbound programs and stuff. They do that punitively. I didn't do that. And Michelle took many people up mountains, and we're talking thousands of people through the years into the Adirondacks and Vermont and all these different places, Green Mountains. And the reason I did that is I would take a kid that had never been out of the city, and I would take them 2-3 miles up into this country. First of all, they didn't think they could do it. About midway through, they'd hate it.
Right. And are we almost there?
Yeah, we're almost there. And I would just lie to them.
Yeah, they would just be like, yeah, we're almost there. And it'd still be another mile and a half up the mountain.
They'd get so pissed
off. Oh, yeah.
So, but I would walk them up there and they'd have this experience. And I said, do you know why I brought you here? Do you know why I made you do this and really encouraged it? And they said, why? And I said, because it's to change your perspective.
That's right.
There's so many things about your life in that place. Let's say it was the inner city. And I said, you know, you've never gotten away from that basic 5 blocks that you grew up in, and you're caught in this pattern with these people, and you really can't see out of it. But I'm taking you out here to show you that there's an entire world that you could be experiencing outside of that. And it's a metaphor for your own mind. And they were blown away, you know?
And it was also a metaphor for life as a journey in general, because the people that would think they couldn't do it, I mean, even when we'd usually adjust for, like, especially when the later years when we were taking very small groups, we would adjust for the people that were going on the hike.
Yeah, you had to adjust for their health.
Yeah, and so when you take a 50-year-old woman who's never done anything like this before, who probably doesn't really exercise and doesn't, and she thinks, I can't do this. And then she does it and it's hard, and she gets through the hard part of it and gets to the top and sees the view, which every view was always spectacular unless we had thick cloud cover. It's life changing. It's a true life changing moment when people push themselves a little bit beyond. And this is really important for, like, this whole self-sabotage idea. I used in a recent coaching session, I said to this person that I was coaching, I told them, I'm like, when you have periods of abstinence, it's like you're trying on a costume. It's like you're going on vacation. You don't view that as as this is going to be my life and I'm going to have a wonderful life like this. You tell me your life takes off and you get happy. And then somehow you just find yourself drinking heavily again. And I'm like, so for what I'm saying is what you're doing is you're going on vacation, but you never planned on moving there. You never planned on setting up a new life there. You had a plan from the beginning that I'm trying this on and I'm not gonna keep it because I don't know what's there.
Yeah.
I don't know what's ahead. And I am more comfortable going back to the struggle because that's what I know.
Yeah. It's like the poisoned well analogy I use constantly because it works so well. Everybody's been thirsty in their life. And yeah. When you have real deep thirst, I'll tell you, you can't think of anything else if you're really dehydrated. So, imagine that you're in the desert and in town, you just keep going to the poisoned well. There's actually places throughout the world where they have these wells that people have been drinking out of that are filled with mercury and all kinds of weird stuff that seeps from the rocks. And they have all kinds of infirmities from it. And the cities and different places that they could travel to aren't beyond the scope of them traveling there, but they stay and they poison themselves.
Yeah.
Now, the reason they do that is lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge that they're drinking poisoned water. And they know something's amiss, but they just assume that's the way it's going to be. I guess pain is
part of my life.
Yes.
That's who I am.
Right. That becomes your baseline. Mm-hmm. And it's better to drink the poisoned water than it is to die of thirst, which is, but there's a third alternative. There's a third alternative, and that's leave.
Yeah.
Go find a clean well, you know? And so it may
but
be
what
just
if that, what if that well's poisoned too?
I know. And a lot of times what happens is that person brings themselves mm-hmm. and carries the poisoned water on their back in a camel pack and continues to make it miserable for themselves. And then they end up repeating the same process. So we do this in our lives because familiarity sometimes trumps risk. And so the question becomes, are you willing to open your mind enough? Here's the beauty. Unlike the poisoned water, you can change the way you think with impunity. You can change everything about this with saying, I'm not going to self-sabotage myself anymore. I think I will challenge myself a little bit. I think I'll get out of the norm and go over here and see if it's better. See if it's better. And I'll tell you something. All through my 20s, I dated and I had relationships with three different women, and each one was better. Each time I tried, it got better and better and better because I was figuring out who I was and what I was looking for in a relationship until I found my wife when I was 30. And we've been married now for 24 years. My point is I was scared of relationships. I really wasn't very good at being close to somebody. I wasn't good at giving. I was good at burning people out, frankly, being charming and then burning somebody out and then destroying the relationship. I was very good at that. It was about a 10-month, thing that I would do to people. And I was really lonely. And I just kept thinking, God, but in my 20s, I decided to change that. I said, I'm going to try to really love somebody. I'm going to try it. I'm going to take the risk. And it was scary to me because mm-hmm. I knew nothing about being vulnerable. My whole instinct is based on abuse and trauma. So as a kid, and as a man, as I grew older, I struggled with all of that. And I talked to thousands of people like this. And, at some point I said, I'd rather take the risk and be vulnerable and have it fail and get hurt than be alone, because I kept feeling more and more alone. And so I figured it out. My point is I kept taking those risks. I kept pushing the envelope a little bit each time. So you don't necessarily have to do this all in one shot.
Yeah.
You can take situations in your life, and this is where coaching really helps.
Yeah.
You can take situations in your life where there's these patterns of self-sabotage, and you can test it against trying something new and experiment in ways that's very productive and change your life And all of a sudden the outcome, you're like, oh my God, I really didn't get hurt as much as I thought it would. Or all of a sudden you go, that didn't hurt at all. And there's a lot more benefits over that hill. That well is better. I didn't know that. Yeah. And that's my whole life. That's, I did not know that I was capable of change. I did not know that there was a better world. I didn't know that someday I would have consistent, loyal love in my life. Did not believe it. So it took me taking steps to get there and then realize one day, yeah, I really am worth that.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting that my life, the more I pushed myself and learned and went beyond the fear that I would be bored, that life would get so good and so easy. Because for me, if there's one reason that I would stay in struggle, it was that fear. That for me was a paramount fear of, I don't want my life to be boring. And which seems trite. I know it does, but that was big for me.
No, that's huge.
And it's never gotten boring. Never gotten boring. It's gotten chaotic in positive ways. Like that's once I started having children, that creates a whole new world of chaos that can be incredibly positive and negative in some ways, but really positive. And now it creates different challenges for work and your marriage and things like that. But but then my kids grew up. Like each stage of life, when they were babies, chaos. Toddlers, super chaos, right? And then school age creates a different chaos. Teenagers, different chaos. And then I remember thinking, being terrified when they were going to leave. And I work with a lot of women who are in that stage of life where their children have left, their careers are kind of, they peaked and now they're kind of winding down. And so that fear of boredom sets in again, like, what the hell am I going to do? You know, or maybe they're newly divorced and the kids are gone and now they're alone. But I can tell you're only bored if you choose to be bored, because there are infinite things that you can do that are infinitely positive. Like, I don't have a moment where I'm not thinking of new things that we're doing. Like Mark and I run our two businesses basically. And you can fill your life with as much as you want. You can create all kinds of chaos in all kinds of positive ways. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So if that's your thing, mm-hmm. if your thing is, oh geez, what if my marriage gets too good and it's boring? What if my, you know, what if I retire and I'm bored? What if I leave this horrible marriage and I'm alone? You know, we keep, if you're a self-sabotager, that really doesn't exist. I hate to say that, but it really, it's a misnomer, because you're creating exactly what you want to create, even if you don't know why. And so the key is to think, what do I value staying exactly the same in the same struggle? What do I value about that? What are the benefits of staying in the same struggle? And, you know, don't even think about the benefits of leaving it just yet. Only focus on, what do I like about this struggle?
Yeah. And when you realize that you're seeing a lot of value in struggle, you're seeing a lot of value in pain. And that typically the things that are of benefit to you, real benefit on the side, like let's say that you are like the person under the table eating scraps. That the best way, a good example of that is the beaten wife or the beaten husband, right? Mm. Where they stay in a relationship that is highly toxic and violent, and their own physical world is in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Right. And yet they stay. This is an extreme example of a style of life that's totally self-sabotaging.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
And then when you originally coach somebody like that and you interview them with the Socratic method and you ask questions and you say, well, why do you stay? The very first thing they'll say is because I love them. And you know what? That's true.
Sure.
They do. And what they're saying is for the amount of crumbs that I get, for the amount, that's what I believe I am worth. I am worth crumbs. I am worth a black eye to get crumbs of love. And they can't, and they struggle to recognize that they may be worth more. And so they don't know. And so sometimes I have to say something, do you know that you're worth more than that? And they don't even know what I mean by that.
Right.
Okay. So I have to walk them to the possibility. Do you know that you can have a relationship where you don't have to pay that price? Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they just blow by it. And no. I go, no, no, wait. Do you really believe that?
Yeah.
Because if you really believe that, you would leave. Then they say, but I don't want to be lonely. And I go, ah, there's the benefit. So you would rather pay the price of the black eye to get a scrap of love than be lonely. So being lonely is lower on the happiness scale, right? Being lonely is down here. It's not very fun, is it? No. And getting a black eye, it's not as bad as being lonely. So it's right here. So
right.
And to be able to not be alone, I'm willing to pay the price of having the black eye. And then I get the scraps, and the scraps are right here. So the scraps sit above black eye and being alone. So once you start to figure out, oh my God, this is my value system. Now, all of that sits relatively low on the evolution scale, because the highest part on an evolutionary scale would be pure joy and bliss, right? Living in bliss and joy, right? Constantly. That would be the ultimate, the nirvana, become a bodhisattva, right? You're way up here. And most people live somewhere in the middle,
yeah,
sort of figuring it out. And the question is, when you get out of that relationship and you move here, you may have to deal with some loneliness. And so they drop back down. But what they don't know is that that can be temporary.
Yes.
So with knowledge and belief, oh, I didn't know. So I might be lonely for a little while, but then I might have something better. Yes. Mm-hmm. Did you know that you are capable of better? No, I didn't know that. Did you know that there's no reason why you can't be loved without a black eye? Did you know that? And you have to be very direct about that. These are questions. I don't judge the fact that this person is willing to pay that price. I used to pay the price of all kinds of fucked up stuff just to have siblings and people in my life that abused me constantly.
Yep.
But I wanted a family so bad. And none of us in my family were very good at loving each other. We hadn't been taught that. So we were like feral animals in a cage. But eventually we all kind of spread out, figured ourselves out. And now when we spend time together, we're loving towards each other because we went out and we evolved. We got yes. out of the cage. So I think it's a matter of, when it comes to coaching, I can coach somebody very quickly to figure out, like Michelle said, what are the benefits of what I am doing right now? Stop acting like this is all just happening to you.
Yes.
Okay. You are choosing a lifestyle for very personal reasons that you may not even recognize. So it's my job as your coach to figure that out with you. And the good news is we're pretty good at that.
Yeah, we're pretty darn good at it.
Yeah. So, because we're on the outside seeing in, you know?
And we've already done it.
Yeah, we lived it.
We've lived it. And do we, are we perfect? No. Do we have normal life struggles? Absolutely. But they're relatively easy. And no, my life isn't boring.
Yeah, my life is
far from boring.
Yeah, I value the 10 minutes I get without the wife in the house or the kids or any right. of the stuff, and just be able to sit and watch a show.
Yeah, yeah, like or sit and read, or, you know, listen to a podcast or listen to my music. Like, we both take walks most days and you know, have our time to be kind of bored for a little while. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way, being bored. I've learned to embrace it and love it the little bit that I get.
And you might be somebody that wants the chaos to stop and you value boredom, but you don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's it really comes down to all of this is understanding why you value self-sabotage first.
Yes.
Next is challenging it and understanding fully that you are capable of something else.
Right. Moving beyond it.
Yeah. And then whether you want to do that can only happen when you understand the difference and that you're capable of it. And so getting there takes some walking. And walking with the coach makes it a lot faster. Just ask any of the people that I've coached and you'll know that I'm not bullshitting you here. In 3 sessions, we can get you really far forward.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I say all that, but only because these self-sabotage situations have been a big part of the last probably 3 students I've had for whatever reason. So I said, you know, it's time to talk about this.
You know, they tend to go in themes.
Yeah.
It is an interesting thing.
I think
they're
serendipity.
I think so, too.
It's just a part of the way it works. So anyway, I hope this was helpful to you folks.
Yes.
And anything else?
I want to just remind everybody that every week we have a free live event. It's usually on Wednesdays at noontime. Sometimes I'll switch it to a Thursday or a Friday if we've got other things going on that particular week. Go to thefreedommodel.org/live-events, and you'll see those dates. I'm going to be adding some new dates for late October and November coming up. Now, we're going to have a couple weeks in November where we may not have them because Mark won't be here because we're getting into hunting season. So, but check out the dates. And if you want to talk with us privately, you can always reach us at 1-888-424-2626. We answer that phone directly. I just went, tried to file an insurance claim and get my windshield fixed. And I got, only machines. I could not talk to a person. It took me an hour to talk to a person. So I want you to know that you may get my voicemail or Mark's voicemail, but we will call you back.
Yeah, we
will not
get
stuck in a loop. You don't do that here. We want to talk to you. We do. Or you can email us if you have any questions, or if you want us to talk about something, you have a topic for our podcast, email us at info@thefreedommodel.org.
All right, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
Take care.